For WTOP News, this is The Book Report. I'm Tariq King. One of the most fascinating books released this summer was Kate Brooks' Transistor, Raising Twins in a Gender-Bending World. Transistor is this incredibly moving and enlightening account of Kate and her family's journey as one of her biologically male sons, one of a set of identical twins, grappled with gender identity to ultimately become her authentic self. For the book report, I sat down to talk to Kate on the eve of the book's release, and here is that conversation.
Thank you so much for joining me, Kate.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So I always ask this first question. What is this book about?
The book is about my child's journey to become her authentic self. She was assigned male at birth. I have twins. Two kids were pulled out of my stomach when I gave birth. The doctor said, it's a boy. Then he said, it's another boy. We believed him. The doctor was wrong. By 8 years old, one of my, I thought, sons said to me, Mama, I think I'm a transistor. When I was in your tummy, it was a mistake. I was supposed to come out a girl. So this story tells our journey.
Before we get into the story, because they're teenagers now, so I wanted to ask you, how did they feel about your decision to write this book?
Mixed responses. My kids are on the one hand proud that mommy has written a book, and on the other hand, they are kind of annoyed that mommy has written a book about them. And they understand that there are reasons behind my choosing to write, and I understand that my decision to write and my desire to write does not supersede their need for privacy. So full disclosure, I use different names in the book. And I refer to my children and family members with different names in an effort to protect their privacy, because my daughter is stealth, meaning she doesn't tell everybody that she's trans. She's just a girl. She tells her best friends. She tells people when she feels comfortable talking to them. So they have mixed reactions to my decision to write the book.
So on page one of the book, page one, we really get to understand your journey to become a parent pretty quickly. You've been through 7 rounds of fertility treatments and you find yourself pregnant with twins. So you nickname these twins before you even have them. You give them nicknames Contemplator and Flailer, because one of these children you knew automatically was distinct and different from the other. Then you deliver the twins. Just talk a little bit about how fundamentally different they were from day one and how you handled it.
Absolutely. So Jacob seemed to be Contemplator, chilling in my womb. I imagined him just like lying there and contemplating world events. Gideon, who was Flailer, seemed to be moving and grooving the entire time he was in my stomach, and came out and was moving and grooving and seemingly uncomfortable in his own skin, literally and figuratively, was a sensory child, meaning he, and I use he pronouns for Gideon, who's now Gabriella. I use the pronouns he to describe Gabriella at a certain time in it. I use it for historical reference. So I am referring to him as he. So he seemed like he was ready to do battle with the world, literally and figuratively uncomfortable. He was a sensory child, didn't like labels on his clothes, didn't like the certain feel of things, could never seem to get comfortable. So received a lot of PT and OT, which helped address some of those external sensory things. And those were some different fundamental challenges that Gabriella ultimately encountered.
So you say sensory child, I just want to throw in that that's sensory processing disorder.
Sensory processing disorder, correct.
Yeah. So for those who are unfamiliar with it or want to know more about it, but when you first got that bit of information, were you of the opinion that, well, maybe that was the beginning and the end of what was troubling this child? Or did you think that there was a little bit more? Obviously, there were further signs.
At 18 months old, I was hoping that was the beginning of the end. Hey, we addressed these issues and we're going to have a more comfortable child. I always said all we wanted was happy, healthy, kind. And so that was the hope. But by two and a half, Gideon was starting to express himself in ways that said to me, wow, I think this kid might be grappling with his gender identity, even at that young of an age. At age 3, he would point at women's shoes and say, heels, flats, which does not inherently make someone transgender. It could make them interested in fashion. He also liked to play with dolls, particularly naked Barbies, which I always found funny because Barbies are not anatomically correct, and yet he seemed to be obsessed with the naked Barbies. And he would do hair and makeup and try on my clothes and try on his girlfriend's clothes. And to me, it seemed that it wasn't just pretend and make-believe. It was his kind of way, I thought at the time, of figuring out who he was.
But the way that you handled it was sort of meeting the child where they are. So how did you handle these different sort of benchmarks? Like, let's start with the naked Barbies, the Disney princesses. How did you handle this? Because you weren't really, you know, there's no manual for this.
There is no manual. And again, with both of our kids, we try to, for the most part, except for when safety is an issue, to follow their lead. We do our best to follow their lead. So when one kid wanted Barbies and princesses and liked purple and pink, that was fine to us. Granted, we are Upper West Side liberal New Yorkers. We have a certain bent, and I don't view the world as boy things, girl things. And there were times that then Gideon would get made fun of for playing with dolls or putting on makeup or liking things that were different than his brother Jacob liked. And there were times that Jacob would be a little embarrassed because sometimes he would be made fun of for the things that his quote unquote twin brother liked. So basically we tried to follow our kids' lead, but there were times that we pushed back a little bit. And I think because we were scared, and by we, I mean my husband and I, for instance, there were times when Gideon wanted a princess cake or a Cinderella cake at his birthday. And I was just like, I don't think we should do that. Or when the first time we really pushed back was when he wanted a princess comforter. And my response was, oh man, I'm sorry, buddy, that comforter doesn't match your room because we just painted it blue. And that really wasn't the answer. That wasn't the reason for my answer. I don't know that I was ready for it. And I don't know that his twin brother at the time was ready for it. And I questioned that night as my then son is wrapped in his new dinosaur bedding, clutching a naked Barbie, if that was the right decision. Why didn't we just give in? I think because I was scared. I was honestly scared. And for a long time, my husband and I would say, wow, we hope he's, quote, just gay. Not because we would love our child any less if they turned out to be transgender, but because we knew that statistically, it was, quote, unquote, easier to be gay. And I'm not saying easy, because all my gay friends tell me it ain't so easy, but it's easier to be gay than it is to be trans, at least at this time in our society. And that statistically, trans, particularly kids, have higher rates of suicidality, higher rates of homelessness, higher rates of mental illness. And turns out those higher rates tend to come if a child isn't affirmed, because if a trans child is affirmed and their gender identity is affirmed and they're accepted, those numbers go down and their mental health outcomes can be largely the same as their cisgender peers if they're accepted. But we were scared. So there were times that we you know, pushed back a little bit and hoped. And then it became abundantly clear that we had a daughter. And when she realized she was our daughter, we were going to do everything we could to support her. And even prior to her realizing she was a daughter, we started going to support groups for parents of gender nonconforming kids, because we kind of saw what was coming in the rearview mirror. And we wanted to be prepared and we wanted to support our kid. And even if it turned out she wasn't trans, she was clearly quote unquote gender nonconforming, and we wanted to support her the best way we could.
And you began going to support groups. This was before, I'm going to say G for neutrality purposes.
Sure.
Before G even had any real concept of what makes a person transgender, what they call the dysphoria, the discomfort around it, was becoming acute, right? And that's what sent you to the support group, as I understand it. G started saying things at around age 6. Mama, sometimes I wish I was a girl. Or sometimes he was expressing suicidal ideation, right? As young as 6. And that's what really spurred you to action. That's my understanding, right? So it was to save your child's life.
Yes. I mean, again, when we had kids, happy, healthy, kind, add alive to the picture. happy, healthy, kind don't matter if you're not alive. We wanted a happy, healthy, kind, alive and functioning kid. And when a six-year-old says, I wish I was dead, or why was I ever born? That's scary. And we knew that we had to act. And it took me a little while to call the Gender Family Project because I was scared. It's not as though calling them would quote unquote make our child be trans or gender nonconforming, but sometimes it's scary. Even as an Upper West Side liberal, it was scary. The unknown is scary. And I didn't know much about trans folks. I barely knew. I had 6 years of experience raising kids, let alone a trans kid. So it was scary. But once G expressed that they were really, really sad and upset, I was like, we cannot wait any longer. We must go.
So you described yourself a minute ago as an Upper West Side liberal, right? You're a Manhattan mom. And WTOP, we're here in the DMV area, Virginia, D.C., Maryland. So there are going to be some opposing viewpoints, I think, that are going to hear your voice and say, okay, well, here's a Manhattan mom, liberal mom, leaning into this idea because this young boy, they'll say, want to play with dolls. And so therefore, they'll say that you're pushing what they call a transgender agenda, right? There's a transgender agenda. Is there some agenda? That's what I'd really like you to engage with. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I was scared to death. Being trans is hard. Every day for my daughter, for Gabriella, even though she's happy and she's a rock star and she's beautiful and she's funny, and she has this magical, her superpower is making friends. She has this magical ability to attract people. Being trans is hard. I don't think one of the trans people that I, one trans person that I know is glad she's trans. Everyone else is not. It is not an easy existence. I would never want to push this on my kid, but I wanted my kid to be alive. And I needed to affirm who my child was. And a lot of people say, well, how do you know if your child is transgender? Insistent, consistent, persistent. If your four-year-old son wants to wear a dress sometimes or says once or twice they want to be a girl, probably not transgender. But if your child continues to say that repeatedly over the course of several months or years, that she is a girl, she's probably transgender. Or possibly. And I think engaging in the conversation, having the conversation isn't going to push a child one way or the other. And yet I was scared, if I'm being honest, to say the word transgender.
And you did.
I was scared because
You didn't for the longest time. I thought that was one of the most interesting things about your story, that G hadn't even heard the word transgender until she was 8 years old. And I'd like you to talk. So your husband called you into the room. You wrote it. It was such a vivid scene in the book. Your husband called you into the room because G had a question. He had seen a sign in the shop. You never used the word around him. He wasn't exposed to any online influences, right? He'd never seen any trans influencers, anything like that. They'd never heard the word before. Tell us why that's important to know. And then talk a little bit about, after you explained the term to him, what followed next, and then this declaration in the crosswalk.
So my kids are at breakfast one day. I'm getting ready in the next room. My husband says, Kate, come here. And I come out. She had a really good question. I didn't know how to answer it. He asked, what does protect trans kids mean? And I said, oh, and I'm thinking to myself, here we go. We're having this conversation that I knew was going to happen, that I was scared for it to happen, but it's happening. And she said, well, I was passing West Side Kids and there was a doll in the window that had a sign that said protect trans kids. And I said, well, do you know what transgender means? And both kids said no. And I said, well, transgender, and I tried to explain it in kids' terms, someone is transgender if, let's say, their insides don't match their outsides. So let's say Daphne, a girl, was born and her parents thought she was a girl. The doctors thought she was a girl because she had a vagina. And over time, Daphne realized she doesn't feel like a girl. She doesn't express as a girl. She knows, she knows that she's actually a boy. Her insides don't match her outsides. And she changes her name to David. And Daphne, now David, would be transgender. I tried to explain it in kids' terms. I didn't do so swimmingly. And both of them were like, wow, that's weird. Who would want to do that? And I was kind of a little relieved because my fear was that once we said the word, G would say, oh my gosh, that's me. That didn't happen, at least not then. But over the course of the next few weeks, she had all these questions. How does someone know if they're transgender? If they're trans, do they change their name? Does a trans girl stand or sit when she goes to the bathroom? Does she just start wearing the clothes of the opposite sex or the opposite gender? I mean, some of the words were different because, you know, they're an eight-year-old child asking these questions.
Yes.
Yeah. So I tried to answer the questions as best I could over time. And then fast forward, we're walking down the street, holding hands on Broadway. Jacob was on a play date. I'm with G. We stop at a crosswalk. And G looks at me and says, "Mama." And I said, "Yes." "I think I'm a transistor." To which I replied, "Do you mean transgender?" "Yes. When I was in your tummy, it was a mistake. I was supposed to come out a girl." And in retrospect, I wish I had said, "Oh, baby, nothing about you is a mistake." But in the moment, I went with a more kind of reflexive response. "It's okay, G. If you say you're a girl, and Daddy and I will love you no matter what, and we'll help you get through this." And I still to this day don't know what "will help you get through this" meant, as though we were going to like walk our kid towards this magical finish line, because it really, that was the beginning of a new journey. But I was scared when I heard that. And I was so relieved, combination of petrified and relieved. Relieved because I thought that my child would now have a better life because of this, because she finally realized who she was. And I could only hope and pray at the time that her life would be happier because she knew who she was. And this whole years and years of grappling with her identity would be behind her. Again, this was just the beginning of a new journey. And I'm happy to report that 6 years later, she's 14. She is happy, healthy, awesome, beautiful, smart, funny. And that time between when she said, "I'm a transistor," to when she actually presented to the rest of the world as a girl was really excruciating. I mean, the process of just coming to grips, all of us emotionally, with the fact that, wow, our daughter is trans. And for her gaining the confidence to actually leave the house dressed as a girl, to even come up with a name. She went through 13 names. It was hard to keep track.
There were a couple of moments in the book that I laughed out loud. And one of them was the name change, or at least one of the names that your friend's trans boy son wanted to pick, Jack. Please tell the listeners that story.
So my friend had a assigned female at birth child who realized that they were actually a boy, a transgender boy, and he was trying to come up with names. Their last name is Ash, A-S-H-E. The kid wanted to change his name to Jack. And my friend, my best friend, Lauren, is like, "I did not birth a Jackash." And the kid was just hysterical.
See, there's accepting, but there are limits, right?
There are limitations. Like, "I did not birth a Jackash." And the kid was absolutely hysterical. So now Jared. But at the time, you know, it can be funny. I mean, most of us in life don't get the opportunity to name ourselves. More often than not, your parents name you. And a name really does bring with it an identity. And here my kid was at 8 years old trying on names. She knew she was a girl. She figured out she was a girl. And again, to the folks out there who are like, how does somebody know that they're a girl at that age? It's not something we took lightly. And I can say that statistically, and I'm not a super big study person, but studies show that by around age two, children become kind of conscious of the physical differences between boys and girls. Before their third birthday, most children can easily label themselves as either a boy or a girl. And by age four, most children have a stable sense of their gender identity. And this isn't, you know, me making these declarations. This is CHOP, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. This is other organizations and hospitals and researchers that have come up with this. So kids do understand gender at an early age. And it can still be really hard if you understand your gender to come up with a name. I mean, this is, Gabriella had gone by Gideon for 8 years. That's what she was called. As uncomfortable as it might have been for her at certain times to be named that, as uncomfortable as it might have felt for her to have the world consider her a boy, to have been told that she was a boy. She had a name, and she now needed to try on new names. And we needed one that fit. And we were kind of under the gun because she was starting a new school with a new gender. And she needed a name to go on the locker, to go on the cubby, to go on the desk. And because she's stealth, meaning she only tells those people that she's really close to that she's trans, it would have looked really suspicious if she changed her name every 2 days.
I can tell in the writing that you take great pains to make sure that you've written a very personal story, not a preachy story, not a political story. It's not one where you're telling anyone anything about what they should think or how they should raise their children, that you're simply telling your story. I think that really comes through in the writing. But since gender affirming care is such a hot button topic right now, as a parent who was forced to learn how to guide a child through this process, how do you feel when gender affirming care is attacked in the media, especially given that you've now had this direct personal experience with it?
Fast forward, my child did go. Gabriella started puberty blockers at the onset of puberty, paused her puberty, giving her and other trans kids time to decide and to determine, is this really a phase or is this not a phase? We were 99.999% sure it wasn't a phase. It wasn't a phase. Fast forward a couple of years later, she is on hormones. She's developing breasts. She is developing features that a traditional assigned female at birth girl would develop. And right now there are almost 500 anti-trans bills that have been proposed in 49 states that are against gender-affirming healthcare. I believe that gender-affirming healthcare is life-saving healthcare. Now that my daughter is 14, she knows about the issues in the news and that trans kids and trans people are under more attack on the legislative front than they have historically been in recent years. And she said to me the other day at 14, "Mom, if I hadn't gone on puberty blockers, I would have killed myself." She had never said that to me before. So I don't think it's just gender-affirming care. I think it's life-saving care. When people attack gender-affirming care, I believe they are putting trans kids at risk. I believe, as Representative Zoe Zephyr said on the state legislature floor back in April, for legislators who ban gender-affirming care, the blood is on their hands. Because these kids can kill themselves.
I imagine that there are probably some parents who may recognize elements of themselves or their children in the story that you've told and which we've discussed today. And we've just discussed a little bit about it. Again, I certainly want people to pick up the book and read all the details. But, you know, these parents may be afraid to acknowledge what they're seeing in their children. They may try to ignore it, suppress their children's behavior. What would you say to them?
Accept your child, respect your child, affirm your child's gender identity. If your child comes to you and says, "Hey, I think I'm trans," or "I'm non-binary," or "My outsides don't match my insides," at minimum, compliment them for being brave and for coming to you. That is a big thing that your child has shared. If in fact your child comes to you with that information, get more information. Seek out a support group. Seek out a therapist. If you don't have one in your neighborhood, go to Trevor Project online. Go to PFLAG online. Folks there can help you find local resources and/or Zoom online resources if you don't have a support group in your area. Information is key. Could it be a phase? It could be a phase. And if you research, if your child goes to therapy, if you go to therapy, I think you'll be able to suss out whether or not this is a phase or this is your child's gender identity. Acceptance is protection. If you accept your child, if you affirm your child, the chances are your child will thrive. That goes for all kids, not just trans kids, but specifically when we're talking about trans kids, the stakes are higher because of the aforementioned increased suicidality risks.
Given the political climate, I can't help but wonder, are you concerned that this book might be banned in Florida?
There's a great likelihood this book might be banned in Florida, and that's okay. I mean, it's not okay. No book should be banned. It's not going to stop me from sharing a message of acceptance, I will continue to share the message of acceptance and education and awareness. And no legislation can erase trans kids, adults, people. Transgender individuals have been around since the beginning of time, and no laws can erase that. Laws can certainly make it more difficult to live a happy, healthy life as a trans person, but no law can erase the transgender population.
Kate Brooks, the author of Trans Sister, Raising Twins in a Gender-Bending World, thank you so much for being with me on the WTOP Book Report today. Good luck with the book.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
And I thank everyone for listening to this edition of The Book Report. For WTOP News, I'm Tariq King.